Yay! I'm so glad that you guys decided to join us today on Tales from the Doghouse Separation Anxiety Explained. This is Stacy Bell from Focused Fun in the U.S. And with me today is...
It's me, Sarah McLaren from Separation Anxiety Solutions in the UK.
And I'm Ness Jones. I'm in Australia from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And today we have one of my favorite episodes. We've done this before and I do enjoy them. We are answering your questions. So without further ado, let's get started. And I have one from... We'll start with Emily, who's got a dog called Kevin. I love that name. It is a fab name, yeah, Kevin. He's a staffy. He's actually a former client of mine, and they did very, very well going through their training program. He was quite exceptional. So she says, as you know, Kevin's separation anxiety really started with outside, and by changing his environment to inside really helped. So that's what I did. So when I did the assessment, we did one with the dog outside, one with the dog inside, and he did so much better inside. So we worked on that and he did brilliantly. He really did. Now she says, we are moving houses in another month and wondering if there are any tips for ensuring his anxiety doesn't come back. I am just thinking to slowly build up the time again, but is there anything we can do from the start that is going to assist? Thanks. Well, thank you very much, Emily, for sending your question through. And yes, it's a very good question. Moving house is what we would consider a big life change, and it can be very stressful. Moving house is one of the most stressful things for humans to do. So our stress always can impact our dogs too, but plus I imagine it's quite stressful for them, new environment and all that. So I would give him a few days to settle in, and in that time I wouldn't leave him alone. So he doesn't build up any sort of fear history around the new house. And then I would just start with some very, very easy door desensitization to get you started and then gradually build up that time from there. What do you girls think?
I think in addition to that, I would try to make, so if you have friends or family that can help watch him, I would... ask for their help during those really hectic days. Like, so moving out of your old house and moving into your new house, those are like with all the boxes and moving people, if you're getting help, can be really hectic. And that can kind of put your dog in a place of anxiety before they even get to the new house. So I would try to do that as well. How about you, Sarah? Do you have another tip?
One of the other things that can sometimes help is if it's a possibility to be able to go back and forth to your new house. I mean, I appreciate depending on where you live, depends on whether you can do that. But if you can do that, then visiting the new house before you move into it with your dogs can always help because it gives them a sense of familiarity when you first move in. And the other one is if Kevin's on medication, is he on medication?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know. I can't remember. I don't think so, though.
Okay, it might be worth a visit for the vet, certainly for the first day or two, to see if there's a situational med that they can use to help, just to make it that little bit less stressful.
Also, for a deeper dive into this, we do have the whole podcast episode on, I think it's actually called Big Life Changes.
I think you might be right, Stacey. Yeah, so you could go back and listen to that. Yeah.
There's always an episode.
I think the biggest thing is to let Kevin settle in, right? So some dogs, you know, that settling in can be a couple of days. For other dogs, it might be a couple of weeks. So you'll really have to be guided by him and see just, you know, when he starts feeling, when you can tell that he's feeling more relaxed and kind of, you know, normal behavior for Kevin, like when you were at your old house starts happening at the new place, then you can start some gentle training. And I would start with easy wins, like Ness said, and then just build up.
I also have a question from a client who is not a client anymore. She's now moved along. But this was one of the questions from Debbie and the lovely Teddy. Teddy's an adorable curly kid, cockapoo. She said, separation anxiety and adolescent pups, does it get worse for a period of time with their hormones mixed into their anxiety, or is there no correlation? Now, there's a question.
Any studies on that?
I don't know. And I'm not sure just how much of it is an anecdotal thing and how much of it is there's a definite correlation between hormonal changes. It's a bit of a funny one, isn't it? Because it could be, you know, from looking at it and depending on, you know, if you've got a dog who's a teenager and they're having a hormonal time, then you kind of think that there's got to be some, it must affect it in some way. It's a bit like teething. I mean, teething's quite a common thing. We know that they're in pain and pain can affect behaviour. So teething must affect separation anxiety training. And then with hormones, definitely around the time, if you decide to do any castration or spaying, that's a sudden change in hormones, isn't it? Going from suddenly I've got hormones to suddenly I haven't.
Right, right.
So there's probably some changes there as well. I don't know. Have you guys got any definitive answers on that one?
I think frequently with adolescent dogs, we do see, and just talking from behaviors like that you have trained them, don't come as easily during adolescence. And so frequently I see that, you know, you have to take a step back and either reteach those or, you know, make those easier and build up again. So it wouldn't surprise me if the same was true with separation anxiety. There's just another thing figuring into the picture that might make it more difficult for them.
There's something I just thought of just then. I was just reminded of a video that I watched earlier today of a young dog and its owner trying to do separation anxiety training. And this dog was like, I want to play. I want to throw my toys around.
That was the most adorable video ever. I mean,
and you could see this, but she sat on the sofa desperately trying not to laugh at him. And he's been an absolute clown with this toy throwing it around. And just thinking of Debbie with Teddy as well. A lot of the videos that I've watched with Teddy, he was doing things like picking things up and he'd come over and look at the camera and fling a football around and do all this kind of thing. So I think as well as if there are, you know, as well as hormones, there's also trying to find that sweet spot to train a young dog between charging down like an idiot and being unconscious can be really, really difficult.
I've got a client who has got a very young dog and it's been playing with the ball when they're doing the training, and the dog is hyped up and it's probably a little bit more hyped up than I would like. But at the same time, if it's playing, it's not in panic. You can't panic and play at the same time. So I'm actually not too unhappy with the training. It's, you know, if the dog's playing, then I'm like, well, the dog's not panicking. So, yeah, but still state of mind, isn't it? So I don't know about the hormonal thing, but you know, if you can get the dog trained when the dog's in the right state of mind, then that's obviously going to be a better way of setting it up for success.
That's half your battle, isn't it? And of course, if you're much better to miss a day that because you know, if things, you know, you do your warm steps and actually things are not going as well as you'd like them to go, stopped. You're much better stopping than pushing it and losing a lot of progress because you've pushed too far too fast.
I had that conversation with a client yesterday.
I was just trying to think about the adolescence thing, and I think, you know, it's just so interesting because in general in adolescence we do start seeing puppies become more independent, so you know, I wonder how that figures in. We should look for a study, and then if we find one, we could do a whole episode on it.
I think that's a good idea, actually. Yeah. So Sarah, it's interesting that you've got a client or had a client called Teddy, because my next question is from Victoria and their dog is called Teddy. And Teddy is a former client of mine as well. So it's funny, anyway, what you were mentioning, because when he went through training with me, he was a very young dog. And initially he'd hang out by the door, but then eventually he was confident and he was getting his independence and he was growing up a little bit. And he kept disappearing into her bedroom and we were like, oh, we better get a camera in there. So she got the camera in there and he was in her bedroom and she had this wash basket full of washing and he'd be like in there grabbing her washing and tossing it around the room. It was so funny. So yeah, but again, adolescent dog playing, not, yeah. So yeah, I just thought I'd mention that. But her question was, can a dog have separation anxiety being left alone when I take the older dog out? But she's totally fine being left alone with the older dog. Does she have FOMO when the older dog is out or does she have anxiety? So basically Teddy was the older dog. Then she got another dog and she can leave both the dogs alone now. And the younger dog, I don't know the younger dog's name, is fine. But if she takes Teddy out without her younger dog gets upset. So I feel that might be more FOMO. What do you guys reckon?
It could be, but it could also be separation anxiety. I had a consult with somebody who had a dog who was absolutely fine at her house. At her sitter's house, she would struggle with being left, like really bad, like very like panicking, not just like tearing things apart, maybe getting into a little mischief or anything like that, but like a complete panic. And they decided that it just wasn't worth it, that if the sitter had to leave, they would just drop the dog off at home and you know, not worry about it. So I think sometimes the dog being in a different environment can have a big impact. I think what I would do is just get a camera on it, right?
I imagine she does. Yeah. So basically it depends what it looks like, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And
she did say, as just an aside, I know Teddy's like is a little bit of an anxious dog in general. Whereas she did say this new dog isn't, that she is a bit more robust and nothing kind of bothers her. So, mm-hmm. but yeah, I guess it, yeah, exactly what you're saying. Get a camera on it and see what's yeah. going on.
Mm. And I suppose, I mean, if she got it as did she get the new one as a puppy, do you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So if the new one's gone from littermates straight to a house with another dog, then being left without the other dog would be a whole new thing, wouldn't it? So whether it's FOMO or anxiety, really, that dog still needs to learn how to be on its own because it's never been on its own.
Yeah. Yeah, so the training looks the same, doesn't it, more or less?
Yeah, it's still the same.
Yeah, and if we're thinking that it could be FOMO, then doing things to, you know, just make sure the dog's needs are met with exercise and enrichment, maybe, you know, doing something like that before a session could help the younger dog be able to cope.
Sorry, just for our listeners that don't know what FOMO is, it's FOMO. It just means, it's just an acronym for fear of missing out. So dogs often get it when they want to be with you and they don't want to miss out on some fun or with another dog. Fear of missing out. My dogs have that.
the other thing that she could do if she's got time to do it is to do some training with them separately, where you've got them in the same area but doing things with them separately, so they learn to settle singularly. That can sometimes help as well.
I got a question from Eva and Lewis, who have Marco, and they are curious about CBD dog treats and if there's evidence that these treats might help dogs with separation anxiety. So that's the first piece. Is there evidence that the treats will help with separation anxiety?
Only anecdotal evidence.
Yep.
There's no research.
So, yeah, there has been some research on inflammation, so like arthritis, and I think seizures, is that right? But not so much on anxiety. And I think one of the things that, like in the US at least,
Was that dog research or human research?
I think the arthritis was dog research, but don't quote me on that. But the problem is that if I'm thinking of the right thing, whether it was dog or people, that it was the dosage that they used in the study was like a ton higher than what you're going to find in a dog treat, or even like the 5 drops that you give your dog from the oil that you buy or whatever. But one of the things to note is that in the US, it was even like CBD was federally illegal until 2018, right? So all of this new stuff that's coming out hasn't been tested and is being sold as a nutritional supplement as opposed to like a drug. So it having drug claims is actually illegal because it's considered a supplement. And so it's not under the same regulations and controls and all of that like a medicine would be, a medication would be.
I just want to say over in the UK now, CBD oil for animals comes under Veterinary Medicines Act. So you're not, by law, nobody should sell it as a pet CBD pet stuff because it comes under Veterinary Medicines now. So you shouldn't be able to buy it over the counter anymore.
But you can get it from your vet
if they want to, if they want to prescribe it, but then I think the AVC are still sort of like deciding whether they want to do anything with it or not, precisely for the same reasons that you've just said, you know, that the research on it is still very sketchy, and from one company to another, the amount of CBD in each thing or what's in it or the dosages and all that kind of thing, they're all just all over the place. So until it's researched and regulated. Yeah.
Right. And the other thing is, like, there was a study by, who was it? Somebody that I probably can't pronounce their name. It was at Cornell. And basically they found that that there was a high prevalence of low concentration in the product. So they tested like 27 or 29 products or something. And just like many of the products were orders of magnitude lower than they advertised. And so
that's interesting.
There was even some with like contaminants, like heavy metals and stuff like that.
Oh, so wow.
It's
kind of
scary. Yeah.
It's, yeah. It's, you've also got to look at the THC content as well. Yes. So, which is the part of cannabis that gets you high. Mm-hmm. So you don't really want to drug out your dog and get them high.
Yeah.
When you get CBD oil, there will always be a tiny bit of THC.
Right.
But it's how much is in there that you've got to look at. And again, if what they're putting out with the content of CBD is incorrect, how do you know what's in it in terms of the THC?
Yeah. Well, and how do you know about dosing, right? Either. Yeah. Like, how do you know how much to give your dog if you don't know how much is in there? Some of the places that sell it will have a third-party laboratory that will test it. And so that's good. But even so, there's not a lot of reliability between batches. And so I don't know how that works really. Like if you get one batch tested and it passes with, you know, flying colors, is the next batch also going to be tested? And I guess that it depends on the company, I suppose. The other kind of thing to take into account, because this is a newer thing, we don't know the effects of long-term administration of CBD to dogs, right? It seems like it it's got a pretty good safety profile and it's low on side effects, but we don't really know what some of the long-term side effects might be because it's not been around that long and not been, you know, tested that long. So that's something to kind of consider as well.
I think also, you know, just in terms of not scientifically, but the anecdotal evidence is kind of all over the place as well. So owners will report it's helped their dogs and some of them will say, no, it didn't do anything. So, but then again, that could be the content of the whatever they're using. We don't know. So,
but yeah. It could be, and it could also be the caregiver's placebo effect.
It could be, yeah. Do you want to describe what that is?
Yeah, I do. I'm trying to think of a succinct way to say it. Basically, when we talk about the placebo effect is when we take something that is maybe like a sugar pill or something instead of the actual medicine, but we still like psychologically feel like that we've taken the medicine so that we're achieving some benefits from it, right? So that's what the placebo effect is. And so the caregiver's placebo effect is, so I give my dog this treat with CBD oil in it. And I feel like I'm noticing less anxiety, easier movement when there is actually not. The problem with caregiver's placebo effect over just the placebo effect is like, if I'm taking a medication and as a result feel like I'm feeling better, then that's my reality. I feel like I'm feeling better. But if I feel like my dog is feeling better, but my dog is actually not feeling better, then your dog is still suffering, even though your perception is that the dog is doing better. So that's, you know, not real great for your dog to be in that place. Okay, so there's a follow-up part to that question that I'm just going to read. And it's, we've heard people mention that they use the CBD treats, but they're unsure if they're truly helpful, which we've already covered, and curious why some people would use them versus drugs like gabapentin, for example. Okay, so I think the reason why I would lean towards recommending drugs like gabapentin or Prozac or fluoxetine or clomipramine.
How do you say it?
My favorite one to say is that those drugs have been thoroughly tested over time. The they're regulated. All the pills are the same. So it's not like a mystery of what you're getting in the medication. So I think not only what constitutes the medication has been tested, but the long-term and short-term effects have been tested. Their efficacy has been tested. And all of those are, I think, you know, really important things. But how about you guys?
Yeah, I think with the medications that we've got that are, you know, prescription type medications, the vets will prescribe medications that they feel comfortable with as well because they've had lots of experience with them. So if there are ever any issues, the likelihood is that your vet will have come across that issue previously and will know what to do about it. So they know what kind of side effects they're going to be looking at. They know what to do about those side effects and whether you need to change your medication or not. And again, yes, the fact that they've been tested ad infinitum does give you a little bit more confidence in their efficacy. Nice word. I don't like that word. But of course, there is the human bias against medication, which generally comes from, what is that medication that it stems from? It's something. Wasn't it? It was in the US, wasn't it? That it was very common. Lots of zombie women in the 40s taking this particular medication.
Oh, really? I haven't heard about this.
Yeah, it gave gave these types of medications a really bad name, and this is where people get this idea that the dogs are going to turn into a zombie if they go on.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
I think Valium might Milltown. Have done the same kind of thing. Milltown, that's it.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. So I think along those lines, Sarah, is the naturalistic fallacy that things that are natural or come from plants are safer, better, whatever. And so that might be another bias people are contending with, or part of the same bias. I don't know. So I think that's part of it. I did want to note, just because I just want to cover the bases in case people are considering trying CBD stuff, is that one of the other things that I think we really need to be careful about is the interaction between CBD and other medications. So it could be like your dog is on fluoxetine and you're like, maybe they could be even more relaxed and you would want to give them some CBD dog treats. And I think, you know, for the reasons that we've talked about, I would caution against that. And I would definitely talk to your vet about it, because there can be interactions. I did a little bit of research on this, because then I like my rabbit holes. But there's like, many drugs are metabolized by the P450 enzyme. And so, which is where CBD is metabolized. So if like for trazodone, for example, in a recent study by Morris et al, trazodone, if your dog is taking trazodone, then CBD inhibits the ability of the trazodone to lower cortisol, right? So it's making trazodone less effective. So that's just like something to consider there. And then also some of the other anti-anxiety drugs, gabapentin, some of the anti-inflammatories, they all rely on that P450 enzyme for metabolizing. And so there's not like a real big understanding at this point on all of those interactions, but it seemed like the thought was if it was metabolized by that same enzyme, then it could cause a interaction. So that would be something to definitely talk to your vet about. Just to make sure that you're not inadvertently making things worse when you're trying to make them better.
Yeah. And we do have a whole episode on natural remedies.
Oh, yeah. Look at us.
This is from Helen. Helen's a clinical animal behaviorist. And she asked, for owners with puppies or young dogs that are destructive, i.e. ripping paper, chewing furniture, emptying bins, etc., and owners think it's naughty or just general puppy behaviour or boredom rather than separation anxiety, how do we know the difference?
It depends what it looks like. First of all, get that camera on them.
The good old camera.
Yeah. Investigate whether the dog's getting enough exercise and enrichment.
Another one I think is, does the dog do that when their person is home? You know, are they only seeing the behavior when the person is gone, or is it something that they're seeing with more intensity when their person is gone? So I think that plays into it. Now, of course, that's not foolproof, because if the dog has been scolded for getting into things when their person is home, sometimes they will only do it when the person's out, kind of like that whole reverse potty training thing is too. But I think that can be used as part of the discovery process of what's going on.
And definitely get up that enrichment, up that, and see, you know, because you'll definitely find out if you've got a bored puppy or a bored young dog if you up that enrichment enough.
And if you've got a camera on them, you'll be able to tell kind of whether it's panic mode that's escalating or whether it's just doing these behaviors, and it's not, you know, it's not escalating. It's just having a party while mum and dad are out. Mm-hmm. Party time.
Another thing to consider is, you know, lumping all destroying into one pot is not necessarily helpful. Like, what are they doing when they're destroying? Like, are they tearing up their dog bed because they're in the crate with the dog bed, and you know, or are they clawing at the front door or chewing around the windows, or you know, are they tearing apart their stuffed animal, or are they, you know, so I think that can give us a little bit of insight as well. You know, what is it that they're destroying? Is it kind of like I'm chewing the leg of the table, which I would be less worried about than clawing at the door or the window?
Yeah.
I think we need to look at what the dog looks like in terms of, is it downloading its stress into what it's doing? Is it trying to find an outlet for its stress, or is it just playing? I think knowing that is really informative.
And knowing what's normal for the dog. Like, for instance, I had our dog before Rowan was named Tanner. And he, when he was at my friend's house, she was watching him one of the times that we went out of town. He didn't have separation anxiety, but he was anxious when he was at her house. And when he was there, he tore apart every single dog, stuffed animal, and toy they had. Right? That wasn't normal behavior for him, but that was a way he was channeling his anxiety. Right? Mm-hmm. So that is an important thing too, is just what is normal for your dog when they're not anxious, and then looking at the behavior through that lens and trying to discern is what you're seeing anxiety or having some fun.
Mm. And the second part of that question was how big a risk that these dogs are going undiagnosed and progressing to full-blown separation anxiety. And that is something that when I read that, I thought, actually, it does make you wonder just how many dogs are put into this naughty camp or destructive camp, when actually it's something completely different. It's just that the owners don't have any perception or any... have not really come across separation anxiety in that form, and just assume that the dogs are being naughty. You know, every time they come home, they've eaten the sofa, or every time they come home, they've destroyed something, and they just end up going down stranger and stranger routes to stop the destruction rather than dealing with the underlying behavior that's causing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a huge problem. And I would always prefer to over-treat something than under-treat something, right? Mm-hmm. So if I think, like I had a neighbor reach out to me who just got a rescue, and he's like, ha, 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 look what happened when I was gone. And the dog, you know, had been in the crate, ripped up its bed, broke out of the crate. And I'm like, you know, like, you know, coming from where we are, you know, seeing so many dogs struggle with separation related behaviors, you know, to me, I'm like, okay, we got to get on this right away. We have to, you know, the first thing we want to check is just like, is it a confinement phobia thing? Is it all about the crate, or would he be okay if he was out? What if, you know, this and what if, and like, so it was a working dog. So like higher energy, more intense kind of dog. And so, you know, I'm like thinking of all these protocols in my head of how can we treat this situation? Where I think it's pretty common when people get like a new dog, it's like, oh, look at they tore this apart, or they did this, ha ha ha, or my dog's so naughty, or whatever, when it could be indicative of a bigger problem, right? And they just don't have the exposure to what it could be. And then like sometimes it's nothing. Like with this dog, got him out of the crate, gave him some time to settle in, upped exercise and enrichment, he's fine. He doesn't have separation anxiety. But like for me, it's like, if you don't take that seriously and start putting some like digging a little bit deeper, what, you know, can we rule out other things, some easier kind of solutions first, then the dog might be just having all of these really negative experiences being home alone. And then that makes it harder to overcome in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. And you worry about these, you know, the owner perception of the dogs being naughty, because we go back to this where they're coming at things from a very different mindset to the owner that's like, you know, my dog's torn the sofa apart. Oh my God, why is my dog that worried that he's needing to tear the sofa apart? That's the mindset you need to be in, isn't it? And I do worry about the ones that perceive it as being naughty, and the fact that they need to stop this behavior because they're getting a new carpet or a new sofa or something. And it's not, it's you know, it's human centric, which is bound to be because we're human. But for us, it's getting the word out to people to try and nip that bias in the bud and say, actually, no, look at it from this point of view instead. Why is your dog doing that?
Yeah. Well, and then the worst possible thing is, like, you have an anxious dog who's just had, you know, a panic attack for the whole 3 hours that you've been gone and has destroyed something. And then you come back and, you know, you feel frustrated and, you know, maybe yell at the dog or whatever. And that certainly just exacerbates the situation. But yes, I think it's something to take seriously if the dog's been destroying. And I think, like, our first answer for everything is get a camera on the dog, right? Because I think what you see, especially as a professional, will be very telling, right? You'll be able to read that body language and say, this looks a lot more like panicking than having some fun with the newspaper or whatever.
Okay, I got a question via my Instagram account, which is _NessJones_. If anybody wants to message me through there, it is from Kitty the Pups and the Bay.
Aw,
Kitty.
Yeah, Kitty the Pups and the Bay. That's cute. Anyway, she says, I rescued her, I guess her dog, just over a year ago when she was maybe 4 to 6 months old. I've kept her in her crate while I'm at work. It took her a while to adjust, lots of barking and biting her cage, but now she is fine and going into it and mainly sleeps. I wanted to start letting her out of the cage when I am gone, as I'd hate to restrict her if I can trust her out alone. This evening, I attempted to leave her out alone after she had been exercised and was tired. As you can tell in the video, she did not like it. I do think she has more FOMO than anxiety. So she sent through a video and it's basically the dog. There was no sound on it, so I don't know, or I couldn't hear any sound on it. I don't know if the dog was barking or not, or vocalizing, but it was almost like a kangaroo. The image was of the door and the dog was going boing, 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 up and down by the door. Yeah. So I guess she wants to let her dog out of the crate, but she's concerned that there's anxiety going on there, but it could also be FOMO. Good. You've got a camera on her. Brilliant, Kitty and the Pups and the Bay. So, yes, that's awesome. You can let her out of the crate, but you need to do some training around that. I feel like perhaps what happened was maybe too much for her too soon. So I would start with, again, some nice, easy door desensitization. And if it is FOMO as opposed to separation anxiety, sure, it's a quicker fix. Theoretically, it should be a quicker fix, but you still need to do training around it. So it's not going to, I would still be doing some door desensitization and some short absences and gradually building them up. It was hard to tell from that video whether it was FOMO. It was a very short video. And like I said, I couldn't hear any sound on it. So, I would still do a training protocol that would look similar to one that I would put together for separation anxiety training. What do you girls think?
Yeah.
There's also, the other side of that is, if the dog is actually happy in the crate, there are some dogs that are happier in the crate than out of it. We know that a lot of separation anxiety dogs suffer with confinement issues, but for some it's the other way around. And it could be if she got a camera on the dog in a crate and the dog is actually really happy in the crate, then they
might feel safer.
Yeah, the way forward would be just to leave her there. We have this, again, that's back to our bias and what we think we should be doing rather than what is in front of us. So, you know, we need to look at the dog in front of us and say, well, what is right for that particular dog? And it could be that it's just happier in the crate.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know the history of the dog. We do know if she got it when it was 4 to 6 months old, which obviously it would be a teenager at the time, or just coming into its teens. Well, probably would have been teething at the time as well. And she's had it just over a year. So now we know it's between possibly 14 and 16 months old. Yeah, 16 to 18 months old. Yeah, so still a young dog, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would also, whenever there's a big discrepancy between scenarios, I always just like to really make sure that the dog is doing as well in the one scenario that the person feels like their dog is comfortable. In this situation, the dog sounds like they're sleeping, so that's fine. But sometimes, you know, the dog is not as comfortable as we think, and maybe it's just vocalizing, but not vocalizing loudly. And so there's like a magnitude difference. Like maybe in one scenario, they're just whining, so the person doesn't know when they come home, it's not disturbing the neighbors, that sort of thing. And then the other scenario, they're destroying things, so it's really obvious. So again, just making sure that that she has a camera on both scenarios and is making sure that even at the start of being in the crate, that the dog isn't showing any distress, just because she had mentioned that early on the dog seemed to have a really negative reaction to the crate. So
yeah, she said it was barking and biting it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, was it biting it because it was teething? Mm. Or yeah, was there something else going on? Yeah, in the barking, yeah.
I'm not going to say who the client is for this one because it's quite, I read it and I was like, oh, this client of, who used to be a client of mine, wants to know why we'd want to stick out the separation anxiety training when it's just the hardest thing to do, and what to do when you've just had a baby and you find it difficult to love your separation anxiety dog at the moment. How do you come back from that? And wow. It's so poignant, isn't it? And it's so, I felt so, not sorry for her, but I really felt for her in that it's such a difficult place to be as a new mom. And having babies is very, very hard work and very hard on you as a person. And then there's this whole outside pressure to be perfect mommies as well these days, isn't it? That seems to be a huge thing. On top of that, you've got a dog that's got separation anxiety and you're trying to do all that training, and you've got a baby and you're trying to keep house and do all the things that all come together as perfect momness. And it's just, my advice to her was to just be nice to themselves and try and find as many ways as possible to give themselves a break and not worry about the training so much. But it's such a hard place to be in.
It really is. And then just to add to that, you know, still the pandemic happening, right? So there's mm-hmm. that extra layer of exhaustion just because we don't really know what the future holds. And then having a new baby and you know, everything surrounding that, I would think that would add a whole additional layer. I have, just right off the top of my head, can think of like three clients that have been in a position where I recommended that we take a break for their mental health, you know, and just, there's no shame in taking a break and just managing things. You know,
yeah.
And so I think by taking the pressure off in that way and just enjoying your dog
mm-hmm.
can help really repair the relationship.
Yeah, she's take some time out for yourself, and you're so right, Stacey. Take the pressure off yourself. Don't put pressure on yourself. And having a dog with separation anxiety is so stressful anyway. You know, you've just got compounding stresses, you've just got to give yourself a break. It's really, what's the right way of saying this? So many people with dogs with separation anxiety say to me how they feel guilty about leaving their dog, but they actually resent them too, because they feel like prisoners. And, I get where she's coming from. You know, she's got all this stress in her life. And it should be the most joyous time in her life, shouldn't it? She's just had a new baby.
Yeah, definitely.
She's just got to, I agree, take a break from training. And,
The other thing is maybe try to come up with more of a schedule for coverage. And we've talked about this a little bit before. It can be uncomfortable to, I don't know if this particular dog is okay at daycare, but you know, sometimes it can be uncomfortable to keep on asking people for help. So if you can do like a blanket ask, like, hey, can you watch my dog on Tuesdays? You know, then you don't have to ask for every Tuesday. You can just assume that Tuesdays are good. And then you find somebody else for, you know, Wednesday and somebody else for Saturday. And then you've got like kind of 3 days where you have a bit more flexibility.
And not to feel guilty for that either. I think that's the other thing, isn't it? You feel guilty for want of a better word, feeling like you're palming your dog off on other people when you should be doing the training, you know, and we all know that should is like such a really bad word that we should never use, because it puts us in such a poor mindset. You're right, Stacey, to use as many people as you can, and let other people look after your dog for you, and let them help you, and let them help you through this period of time, because as all things, you know, it will pass, just not yet.
You will come through this. And it's not uncommon to feel low with dogs, having a dog with separation anxiety.
Not after having a baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
And before you know it, they've all grown up. My granddaughter was 16 a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Granddaughter.
Okay, so my the next question that I had was about traveling and then coming home after you've traveled and how to resume training there. So for this one, the dog was at a dog sitter, but I just did have I just had actually two clients with this. So it was funny that I got this question as well. But basically what I typically do is drop to so go on vacation, come back, give the dog a couple days to settle in, like the move thing, kind of gauge on how your dog is doing. If your dog seems stressed and clingy, I would not worry about training. Just wait until they feel more settled. And then once your dog is feeling settled, then I would do an easy win. So for one of my clients, for example, they were on 30 minutes. She got back from being out of town for a little over a week, maybe it was 10 days, but between 7 and 10 days. So they were at 30 minutes. We dropped down and we just did a test. Like, let's just do 5 minutes. Is 5 minutes easy? Yes, 5 minutes is easy. Okay, let's do 10 minutes. Is 10 minutes easy? Yeah, 10 minutes is easy. So then, you know, we're just chunking up in that way until we get back up to the 30 minutes, and then we'll kind of resume our normal way of bumping things up a bit more slowly. So that's typically how I do it, just to give the dog some easy wins. Now, if at any point the dog started struggling, like say we tried 10 minutes and 10 minutes is hard, then we're going to go a bit more slowly. We're not going to, you know, keep jumping up, obviously. But how about you guys? How do you handle when people travel or have some sort of disruption like that?
Pretty much the same. I think some clients who've just come back off holiday, and it does surprise me how resilient some dogs are to that bit, and how quickly some of them just drop back in without hardly a misstep. You know, we might do a, you know, maybe Dory's a ball the day after or something like that and see how they go. But then, like you said, we drop back into it and then pretty much rock back up to where they were before they went away so far.
It's interesting. I've had some clients with dogs that barely miss a beat and others that really struggle. And I think part of it is knowing your dog, right? Like, so if you do travel a lot and you know your dog struggles, you know that's going to be part of the system you build, right? When I come home, I know it's going to be, you know, 4 days before we can get back to where we were, or even more maybe, you know. And then for the dogs that can pick it right back up, you might do like an easy exercise and then resume, you know. So it is about knowing your dog and how they do. I've also had clients where when they first started traveling, the dog would really struggle. And then as travel became more frequent, the dog kind of got used to it and knew the drill and didn't struggle with travel anymore. So at first we needed to do that whole drop it down, build it up kind of chunkier. But then how we ended up is we would just start off, you know, pick up where we left off. So it really does depend on the dog a little bit, but generally I start with some easy exercises first.
And it's the same with dogs when you take them away with you, isn't it? Because like we, you know, if you've got a holiday home somewhere, when you first start taking them to your new place, you know, it's just as difficult as something they've never done before. So you might need to adjust the training when you get home. But hopefully as they go year on year, or, you know, however many times a year you go to your private yacht in the Seychelles or whatever it is, then, you know, they get used to it, don't they? And they get better and better at it every time you do it. So it depends on what you're doing and where you're going and how often you do it as to how well they start to adjust to it in time.
That's true.
Lots of people in Australia go camping with their dogs, and they'll travel around Australia with their dogs for, you know, months on end or what have you. And, you know, those dogs with separation anxiety have to learn to, you know, their options are a little bit more limited when they go traveling. I know it's not quite the same thing as what we're talking about now, but yeah, they have to figure out how to leave the dog while they go and do the shopping and things like that. Or if they want to go to a national park where dogs aren't allowed, what do they do?
I had a client that went on a trip, and it was a little complicated like that. Like there were some things that they were going to do that they wouldn't be able to bring the dog. And they found, they did an awesome job of planning ahead and vetted some Rover people in the area where they were going to be traveling. Made sure that they felt comfortable with the people and then dropped their dog off with them before doing the things that the dog couldn't participate with.
Good idea.
Okay, I have one last question. This is from Ginny, who's a member of my Facebook group, which is Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And she saw a post that somebody else put up somewhere else, I'm not sure where, that the owners had bought a kitty cat for their dog, and the dog was doing a lot better with its separation anxiety. So Ginny's dog has got pretty bad separation anxiety, and she would like to know, would getting a cat help? Going to answer that firstly by saying I had a client, and actually, Ginny, it was a beagle, and I know Ginny's dog is a beagle, I'm pretty sure. And it was a couple, and they were living separately and decided to move in together. And that beagle moved in with two kitty cats, and the training went backwards. It was destabilized. Maybe it was probably the move as well, to be fair, because, you know, new house, etc. But yeah, there was issues with the kitty cats. They didn't get on as well as we might have liked. Or he got on, sorry, she, her name was Ashby, is Ashby. Ashby got on okay with one of the cats, and the other cat wasn't a big fan of Ashby. So but yeah, look, and but then you've seen that post where it says it helped another dog. So yeah, I'd say it depends, doesn't it? It's one of those questions.
I would say chances are no, that it's not gonna help your dog. I would say that there's a higher chance that it's not gonna help your dog than it would. But I've experienced the same thing, Ness. I've had a couple different clients where the cats made it trickier, you know, just because either their movements or, you know, the dog and the cat had to be separated. So they, you know, we had to introduce some level of confinement with gates and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, it can end up complicating the training. And just like from the scientific studies, we know that having another dog typically does not help. So then a cat, I think, would fall into a similar category there.
Yeah.
If she really wants to get a cat because she wants a cat, then get a cat. But if you want a cat to fix your dog, no.
Her husband doesn't want a cat for starters. So
you've got that. That's the answer to that question. No.
Yeah. I've got a client that has a dog of separation anxiety. She's been sending through the videos, and the cat hang, it's almost like the cat's participating in the training. It just hangs out on the couch. Definitely doesn't have separation anxiety. I've seen no signs of stress whatsoever, but yeah, they're in and out of the door, and this cat's just like hanging out. Yeah.
yeah.
So that's it. Questions answered. There we go.
Yeah. Ta-da! Yeah, let us know if we if you feel like we answered your question incompletely, and we will try to revisit it on another episode. Otherwise, thanks for tuning in.
Exactly, yeah. I've got some exciting news too, guys.
What is
Well, we are available on Audible in Australia. Not on Amazon Prime. Yeah, not on Amazon Prime, because as far as I'm aware in Australia, Amazon Prime doesn't distribute its podcast for some reason, but we are definitely on Audible. So that's exciting news.
Super.
Yay.
Oh, and that wraps up another episode of Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. I do like answering listener questions. I think it's really fun. We'll definitely do this again in the future. I'm Ness Jones. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded, and I am in Australia. Please reach out if you need some specialist help.
Hey, I'm Stacey Bell from Focused Fun in the US. You can find me at focusedfun.net or on Instagram and Facebook at Focused Fun Dogs.
And you've been listening to me, Sarah McLaren, from the UK, from Separation Anxiety Solutions. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook. So thank you for listening to yet another episode of Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. You can find us on Spotify, Twitcher and Stitcher, Google, and now on Amazon and Audible in Australia and all major podcasty places where you normally find your podcasts. If you can, please come along and tell us how wonderful you think we are. Leave us a review and come and speak to us anytime you like, because we are available. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.